Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who. Star Wars of Doctor Who.
His name is Rob.
His name is Rob.
He knows his Wookiees from his Daleks. Listen now.
Listen now.
Hear the Force challenge the TARDIS. Get your blue milk and jelly babies while we see which drives you crazy. Star Wars or Doctor Who.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars, the podcast for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who. I'm your host, Rob Irwin, and this is episode number 22, coming out on the Australia Day long weekend. What's Australia Day, I hear the overseas people ask? Well, January 26 every year is the day we celebrate European settlement in Australia, and it involves a public holiday on the Monday, closest to whenever the 26th falls. So yes, I'm on a long weekend at the moment. It's pretty good. The fridge is full of cold beer. There'll be some good sport on television. I'm recording a podcast about my two favourite topics. Life is pretty good, I've got to say. First up, I want to talk this week about our Facebook page. Now, we've had a small following on Facebook. This has actually been quite interesting to me. We have about 1,700-something Twitter followers, which is a fair Twitter following. But our Facebook page has always been around the Baker's Dozen. It's been around 13 people for, you know, a long, long, long time. But just recently, there's been a real avalanche of people. And as I sit here recording today, there are now 175 people following us on Facebook. That's huge, especially in the space of about a week to jump from, you know, a Baker's Dozen up to about 175. It's really quite amazing. So hopefully you're listening to the show this week if you're a newcomer to Who Wars, or if you're an older fan who's just been listening and talking to us on Twitter perhaps, or maybe not through social media at all, and this is the first time you've used social to contact us. Welcome. Thank you for following us on Facebook. And as I put in a post there the other day, if you really want to help us, please pot it forward. Tell your friends about us. If you've got a friend who likes Star Wars or Doctor Who, but I guess preferably both given the way we mix them up, tell them about our show. That would be a huge honor to us, and almost as good as leaving us a review on iTunes. Drop over to iTunes, leave us a sweet 5-star review, as my friend Steele Saunders would say, and that would be a big help to us as well. Speaking of Steele Saunders, he recently renamed his podcast, his Star Wars podcast, at least. He does have two podcasts, but his Star Wars podcast was called This Isn't the Podcast You're Looking For. It's now called Steele Wars, with the subtitle This Isn't the Podcast You're Looking For. And if there are people out there who have never listened to his Star Wars podcast, do yourself a favor and have a listen. What he does is grabs interesting Star Wars fans each week. These may be musicians or fellow comedians. Steele is a Melbourne-based comedian, or they may be people who have worked on the films, or they may be people who are interesting in other ways. He spoke to the chap who runs the fashion label The Hundreds recently about loving Star Wars. He gets some really, really, really cool guests. And basically, he just talks to them about how they came across Star Wars, what they like about Star Wars, and just lets the conversation flow on in any sort of way it sees fit. And it's a really, really, really enjoyable podcast. Something I often say about podcasts, I'm not sure I've said it on this program before, but something I say a lot in real life at least, is I think comedy plays a huge part in any successful podcast. So I should inject more comedy into this show perhaps, because we aren't really a funny podcast here, but I can recognize that it's podcasts produced by comedians or podcasts that have an element of humor. To go off on a tangent, I have a friend called Cameron Riley who, along with a chap in the US called Ray Harris, does a couple of podcasts, one on Julius Caesar and one on Alexander the Great. And they could conceivably be called comedy podcasts because they approach the subject matter in a very light way. And as they talk about these historical events, if any sort of funny thought pops into their head or funny line or whatever, they just go for it. And that makes, you know, what is sometimes very dry ancient history very, very interesting. And I just have this concept that comedy does bring a lot to podcasts. And with Steele being a comedian and with his guests often being comedians themselves, you can listen about Star Wars and hear a fan's perspective, but also have a really, really good laugh. Anyway, I bring up Steel partly because he did change the name of the podcast, so if you're now looking for it, do look for Steel Wars. That's STELE Wars. And also because he recently had a two-part episode where he sat down with a couple of comedians to talk about the episode 7. Well, not so much the spoilers about episode 7. In fact, that was what the episode was trying not to do, was trying not to spoil people. But talking about what we might know about episode 7 in a non-spoiler way and what we might be looking forward to in episode 7. And the first half of that podcast, first episode, was himself just chatting to these two comedians about their, you know, hopes and wishes. One is a very committed Star Wars fan. One is someone who's never really seen it before, but does know about it. Obviously, it's so big in pop culture. And then the second episode, he took questions from his Facebook page. And the first of those questions that gets asked in that episode is from me. And I asked the question whether the guys would rather that in episode 7... The rebellion has been fighting the Empire for the last 30 years, i.e. they might have blown up the Death Star, they might have killed the Emperor, but the Empire was still out there and still a massive war machine, and they've still been fighting it, you know, 30 years on. Or whether they like the idea that not so much as soon as the Death Star blew up, but maybe within the first 4 or 5 years afterwards, they mopped up the Empire and there's been a period of peace. And then in episode 7, the Empire comes back. Now, I think you'll have to listen to that episode of Steel Wars to hear what Steel and Justin Hamilton in particular have to say about it. The other guest, Jonathan Schuster, doesn't have as many thoughts because obviously he's not the Star Wars fan on the podcast. But do have a listen. There's a great answer to my question. There's great answers to other questions too. And if you're a Star Wars fan, I really cannot recommend enough the Steel Wars podcast to you. Moving on, and to wrap up this week, we're on the long weekend here. I'm looking after a convalescing cat. My little cat had a little lump chopped off his chin on Friday, and so he's got stitches in his chin. I have to be watching him pretty closely if he's not wearing his Elizabethan collar to stop him from touching those stitches. So I'm sitting around the house, you know, my wife's pottering around gaming and so on, and I popped on Matt Smith's final Doctor Who episode, The Time of the Doctor, from December 2013. I last saw that episode the day it went out here in Australia, which was Boxing Day, December 2013. And I watched it once and I thought, oh, I'm really not happy with the way that Doctor left the series. And you know what? Watching it again, I liked it a lot more than I did the first time around. I guess we've had that Doctor leave. We've had a whole another series of a new Doctor since then. And maybe with a bit of distance between me and that episode first going out, I saw it in a different light. And I liked it more than the first time. I'll happily admit to that. I still don't think it was a great episode to go out on. It's quite a strange episode in some ways. The storyline and what happens in it, and the Doctor, you know, living out his final few hundred years in a town called Christmas and all of that sort of stuff was quite odd, but it did tie up some loose ends. There are some beautiful scenes in it. And by God, that regeneration scene at the end gets me more and more every time I see it. The way the Doctor talks about how we're all different people through our lives, and that's cool, you know, as long as we remember who we've been in the past. And then when he has his little hallucination and Amy Pond comes in. I don't even like Amy Pond. Let's get that out there on the table. There are some good Amy episodes. Yes, Amy's Choice is one of my favourite Matt Smith episodes. But on the whole, I don't like the Amy Pond character at all. And we could have a whole podcast on why that is, but I won't bore you with that. But even when she appears, even when this character who I don't particularly like appears, when the Doctor hallucinates her coming in and saying, Raggedy Man, good night. Oh, God. The feels, you know, as the kids say on the internet, the feels. It's it was really something. I really enjoyed going back to it for the first time since I first saw it. And that was really great. People listening to this podcast have probably watched it a dozen times since it went out. Maybe they watched it a dozen times the week it went out. I don't know. But I've had a very different experience. I watched it once, I took it in, looked at it for what it was, and never went back to it until this weekend. And it was nice. I liked it. Anyway, that's my little Doctor Who story to round out my intro this week. Now let's get into some Star Wars and Doctor Who news and see what's happening around the traps. Okay, and moving on to our Star Wars news for the week, and I guess one of the biggest stories this past week is that George Lucas has revealed that Episode 7 of Star Wars is not based on the little story, the little screenplay that he sketched out and provided Disney when they bought the Star Wars empire off him. Now, this is very interesting because if you go back to the Who Wars episode from December 14th last year, when we had George's very underwhelmed reaction to the Star Wars Episode 7 trailer, and, you know, I think the question was, are you interested in what JJ is doing with the film? And I think he said, you know, basically, no. I speculated then that something had happened, and as fans, well, as more hardcore fans, we all knew that George had provided some kind of story, and he was on board as some kind of story advisor, and there were pictures of him and J.J. Abrams in a restaurant, I think it was, these lovely black and white photos. And I speculated back on December 14th that for George to be so nonplussed about the film, something had happened, and there was a good chance that maybe J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan had tossed out George's ideas, and thus George was like, well, if you toss out my ideas, I'm not interested in your film, you know, something along those lines. And lo and behold, here we are in January, just over a month later, and that is the case. I thought it might have taken longer to come out, but no, it's just over a month later from when I speculated that, and that's what happened. They've gone with a different storyline to what George wanted to do. And that's all there is to it. I'm very interested now in seeing Episode 7 and seeing what, you know, J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan have written and how it might differ to what George wanted to do. I think if we can get some kind of feel for what George's treatment was about, it will provide fans with many, many, many years of debate as to whether what George was thinking could have been really cool, or whether what JJ came up with was better. It's interesting times ahead. We're talking years off for this kind of stuff, I think. I think we're going to get through this year. We'll see the film. It'll be a while before I think we get any kind of vibe on what George was wanting to do. But it will happen. I'm sure of that. It will happen, and it will be very interesting when we finally know. Okay, now moving on, we've spoken a bit about Star Wars spin-off films before. We've spoken about possible Obi-Wan films, possible Yoda films, possible Boba Fett films, possible Han Solo films. Well, all of these rumors are starting to mesh, and it seems that the spin-off movie from Godzilla director Gareth Edwards, at least, will be a Han Solo and Boba Fett film. That's very cool, and I think we can already start to speculate in our heads what it's about. Not least of all because the Oscar-nominated Theory of Everything actress Felicity Jones is apparently in the running for one of the lead roles, possibly Princess Leia. Now, Felicity Jones is, I believe, 31 years old. She doesn't look it, though, so she looks like she's in her 20s somewhere. So that would mean she would be playing a Leia who is A little older than Empire Strikes Back Leia, perhaps. Or maybe around the same age as Empire Strikes Back Leia. Which would make more sense, because I guess if Boba Fett and Han Solo are running around, Boba Fett's chasing Han Solo, it would make sense for it to happen before Empire Strikes Back. Because obviously in Empire Strikes Back, Boba gets his man. Yeah, look, if this is a movie set between Star Wars and Empire, with Han Solo on the run, Princess Leia in tow, I think that could be very, very interesting and very cool. We've just got to see what comes up. As to what the other spin-off movies are, your guess is as good as mine. I really would like to see an Obi-Wan movie. I'd love to see a sort of a spaghetti western Obi-Wan film with an older Ewan McGregor getting around Tatooine, maybe getting off planet and having some adventures as well. I think that would be very cool. But at the moment, you know, the focus does seem to be on this Gareth Edwards film, which now seems to be a Han Solo / Boba Fett film. Who'll play Han Solo? I think we've had some speculation on that in the past, but currently, even though they seem to be casting at the moment, there's no strong sort of rumours on that. All right, moving on. Peter Mayhew, as we all know, played Chewie in the original trilogy. He got a spot in one of the prequels, and of course he's in Episode 7. He's currently in hospital with pneumonia. which is very sad. He's 70 years old now, so he's older, I guess, than we sometimes think, because these movies were made so long ago. And at 7'3", he certainly had his share of health issues over the years. I think he had his knees replaced not too long ago. Obviously, being very tall like that can really take its toll. But apparently he's doing well in hospital, and he will come out soon, and will make a full recovery. So that's good to hear too. I'd certainly like to see Peter Mayhew on the red carpet later this year when Star Wars Episode 7 debuts. Rounding out the Star Wars news this week, Good Old Games, which is a place you can buy older PC games, and notably PC games without digital rights management built in, so that you can download them and put them on as many PCs as you want. Hopefully just your own PCs. Hopefully you're not sharing your copy with everyone you know. But they started uploading some Star Wars games in recent times. We've had this in our news section before, and they've gone down very well, it seems. Because in the last few days, they've also uploaded some more Star Wars titles, those being Star Wars Rogue Squadron 3D, Star Wars Rebellion, and the Star Wars Empire at War Gold Pack. Now, I remember all three of those games. I've played them. Empire at War, for example, is a real-time strategy game. If you ever played Command and Conquer or Age of Empires back in the day, it's along those lines, except using Star Wars characters, and it's kind of cool. It's looking a little clunky now. It's an older game, but that's the whole point of Good Old Games. Now, there will be a third wave after these titles, which have just come out, coming on January 27th, so a few days after this podcast goes out, and it's going to include Star Wars Republic Commando, Star Wars Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2, and Star Wars Starfighter. Now, I can speak to all three of those games as well. They're some very fun games. Star Wars Republic Commando, for example, is a first-person shooter and is, you know, using characters which later went on to be included in the Karen Travis Republic Commando novels, which was a great series of novels. Karen Travis, of course, a very controversial author in Star Wars fandom. It seems people either really, really, really love her or really, really, really hate her. I'm in the love her camp. I think she is a fantastic author. I think she captured Star Wars really well. She upset a lot of Jedi fans out there by pointing out that the Jedi aren't always right about everything, that the Jedi were essentially in charge of a slave army, whether they saw it that way or not with regard to the clone army. You know, these were sentient, real people, but bred to be soldiers and soldiers only, bred for war. They are essentially slaves to the Republic. She brought all those kind of, you know, really loaded concepts into her novels and into her commentary on Star Wars in general, and I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a really different take on things. My quick take on this is that I don't think everyone in the Star Wars universe would look on Jedi in the same way. You know, we watch them on the big screen and see them flipping around and, you know, swashbuckling their way across the universe and having these laser sword fights and stuff, and we think, wow, that's really great. But, you know, if you're in the Star Wars universe and you had these beings who had sort of almost supernatural-like powers and, you know, were sort of a law unto themselves in some jurisdictions, would you necessarily think they were so great? Some people might idolize them, other people might think they're a menace, you know, with the way they go on and have these fights that, you know, ruin whole sections of cities at times and, you know, crash starfighters and all sorts of stuff, which looks spectacular on the screen, but again, you take it back to living in that universe and having these people around you. And it's very similar, I guess, to living in a cartoon hero universe, or a superhero universe, I should probably say, and having, like, you know, Superman or Spider-Man swinging around your city, causing mayhem. You know, they're saving your city, they're trying to protect you, but in the process they might knock down buildings, or, you know, there might be gunfights and it's quite dangerous. You might not necessarily think of those guys and girls as favorably if you actually lived in that universe with them than we do as, you know, outsiders reading their stories in novels or comic books or whatever. Anyway, I digress. It's time to get on with the Doctor Who news. And heading up the stories this week, Russell T. Davies chatted with Graham Norton this past week. I'll play you the audio clip now and be back in a moment.
Jill in Port Talbot. Sunny Port Talbot.
Jill.
Jill, really, Jill. I read you'd never go back to Doctor Who, but if they made a movie and someone asked you, would you consider it?
Oh, Jill, that's a sly question. Yes, I think it should be in the movie, in the cinemas immediately. I think it'd be glorious. Imagine queuing up at the cinema to go and see a Doctor Who film. I would be there with a sleeping bag. So I hope one day someone does it. It would be brilliant.
But would you write it?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you, Jill. If we could get the lawyers and the contracts flying now. Do you know, I would do that because I think there's something... There's a big leap to be made onto the screen. Oh, I can hear the Doctor Who office with their heads in their hands now going, shut up, David, shut up. I've literally just realised where I am, that I am actually broadcasting to the nation. And they're, oh, trouble now, Graham. Can I just stay here?
Oh.
Can I stay in my little booth and never go out again? Because they'll kill me for that.
And there we go. I think we can see where RTD is coming from there. He's obviously opening a can of worms by mentioning anything to do with the Doctor Who movie. See, I don't think... There's a Doctor Who movie on the horizon. I don't think Russell T Davies is involved with it, obviously, because there is no film to be involved with. But just speculating like that will drive fans into a frothing crazy, particularly as, you know, Russell T Davies is so beloved by many Doctor Who fans. Of course, he has his detractors as well, just as the current showrunner Stephen Moffat has his. There were plenty of people who didn't like Russell T Davies back in the day. So... Oh my God, he's really opened a can of worms there. Moving on, Doctor Who has been nominated for a GLAAD Award, that's GLAAD, and that's for an episode which showed the show's first lesbian kiss. Now, apparently that was the kiss in deep breath between Madame Vastra and Jenny Flint. I must confess, when I read this news, I thought, well, that's fantastic. It's good that, you know, the show's being recognised by this... Gay and Lesbian Association for that aspect of that particular episode. But I honestly thought that wasn't the first time they'd kissed. Obviously it is, because that's what they're getting nominated for, and that's fine. But I thought Madame Vastra and Jenny had an on-screen kiss before that. So it just goes to show how much attention I pay to these things. I think it's great that Madame Vastra kissed Jenny, and they're getting an award for it. Fantastic. Let's move on. David Tennant has been out and about. He was at the National Television Awards in the UK on January 21st, so a few days ago now, and he said it's going to be at least 10 years before he'll consider being in Doctor Who again. And the quote he's given there is, I think you have to ration these things. It's probably got to be at least 10 years before that happens again. And by that, he means a multi-Doctor story, like we had back in 2013 in relation to the Day of the Doctor episode, where we had David Tennant, Matt Smith, and John Hurt, of course, playing the War Doctor. So it's a shame to think he thinks it'll be 10 years. I think we'll see a multi-Doctor story within 10 years. I'm not saying it's going to be next season or the season after, but I think 10 years might be a little long to wait. I think now that the show's been back on our screens for a decade, we've had that 50th anniversary, new fans who may have never watched the classic, you know, series and never seen the Three Doctors or the Five Doctors or the Two Doctors, those being the three multi-Doctor stories back in the classic era. New fans now have seen a multi-Doctor story. I think they liked it. I think they'd like to see it again. It might not be a Doctor appearing all the way through a story, but it might be a Doctor making a cameo in some way. Perhaps the Capaldi Doctor finds... I don't know, a hologram of one of his former selves giving him advice on something, and that's played by one of the past Doctors. So it's not really two Doctors on screen together, but it is one of the old Doctors coming back and reprising the role in some way. I think that's very, very likely within the next 10 years. And if I had to decide which Doctor it probably will be, I'd say Matt Smith, who really loved playing the Doctor and I think regretted giving up the role when he gave it up. I think as soon as he gave it up, he realised he'd made a mistake and maybe should have stayed another year. So I think Matt Smith would come back at the drop of a hat, and his hair might be regrown by that stage too, so we wouldn't have to see him in that ridiculous wig from his final episode. But I digress. To round out this week, let's talk about Series 9. There's not a lot of news out there at the moment about Series 9. It's expected to go out in the UK in the autumn. We know that the first episode of the series is going to be called The Magician's Apprentice. That's an intriguing title. What could it refer to? Well, as Clara's back, could it refer to Clara being, you know, an apprentice to the Doctor? Well, I guess she's adventured with the Doctor for a little while now. She even said she was playing the Doctor in the last series. She's been the Impossible Girl. She's helped every incarnation of the Doctor across time and space. Does that necessarily sound like an apprentice maybe not. It may relate to someone else in that episode, and the magician might not even be the Doctor himself. Although, of course, the Capaldi Doctor does have fun made of his costume, and he himself has even referred to it as a magician's outfit, so maybe there's something to it. Maybe there's a new companion coming on board. Maybe it's the new companion who's the magician's apprentice. Who knows? I'm spitballing here. I've just given you three different options, and none of them might be right. What else do we know about it? Well, we know that Neil Gaiman is not going to be writing for Season 9. That's a shame in some ways, but maybe if you've only seen Nightmare in Silver, it's a blessing. Neil Gaiman is a phenomenally talented guy. I do think he stretches himself a bit thin through all the appearances he does around the world, all the talks he does, all the backup of his wife, Amanda Palmer, that he does, and everything else that he manages to squeeze into the day. How does he do it? I don't know, but all I know is he's written two stories for Doctor Who, and one of them was absolutely fantastic, and one of them was absolutely disappointing. So, on balance, it's really a 50-50 kind of thing. Am I sad or am I happy that Neil's not coming back? It's really 50-50, because so far he's given one good ep and one bad ep. But we know he's not coming back. What else do we know? I'm just scanning through the notes I've made here. There was a quote from Neil Gaiman too. He said, I'm not writing for Series 9 right now just because of ridiculous work commitments I'm trying to get out from under. But he says he is absolutely determined to write for the Capaldi Doctor. And, you know, given that we're going into the second series of Capaldi now and he'll at least do three, I'd say Gaiman will come back in another series time. Regarding director rumours for Season 9, Daniel O'Hara, who I'm not familiar with, but he is said to be helming two episodes. And Peter Jackson, yes, that Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings Peter Jackson, Meet the Feebles Peter Jackson, Bad Taste Peter Jackson, The Hobbit Peter Jackson, that Peter Jackson from New Zealand has been talking about directing a Doctor Who episode for what seems like forever, but it's probably about 3 or 4 years at this point in time, and it does seem that Series 9 could be when he gets his chance to do that, and that's very cool. I'd love to see Jackson go back to directing on a shoestring budget. Very tight turnaround, not, you know, recording people for a year and then spending another year in post-production and then another year for the next film and so on and so forth. It's something he'll have to turn around fairly quickly. I think it might suit his abilities. It's how he used to film back in the early days when he was an indie filmmaker, and that's very exciting. So that will be huge news. That will be a huge coup for Doctor Who if Peter Jackson flies over to the UK and directs something for Series 9. Anyway, that wraps it up for the Doctor Who news and the Star Wars news this week. Let's move on. We're going to hear now from the Rev, who's going to talk about the Star Wars radio play. So Star Wars fans, hold on to your hats. We're going to talk some Star Wars.
I love the instant world we live in. Being able to enjoy news, conversation and updates with a network of global like-minded people on all manner of subjects instantly, not least of all Star Wars. But I have exceptionally warm and fond memories of the hard work that used to go into gaining information or glimpses of stuff about the original trilogy. It certainly was a galaxy far, far away. Gathering intelligence took numerous forms, be it squinting the ink off the back of a Palitoy action figure card, sneaking a peek at one of the 8 pages of colour in a novelisation in Beckett's sweets and tobacconist shop before being asked to leave if I wasn't buying, or shuffling through a deck of Panini stickers in the playground, usually saying the words, got, and desperately awaiting the sight of a new sticker with new visual data with the declaration, not got. This patchwork journey of piecing together how the films might work was a labour of love. I had scrapbooks of cuttings from all manner of magazines, not Starburst or movie mags, but more often random tidbits from me mam's Woman's Weekly. For these reasons, I'm loving the current rumblings of the new film, and I almost don't want the moment of seeing the film to arrive, because to feel like this again is amazing. All the little superstitions that seem to be linked to the new film, filming in the UK, using physical props, casting newcomers, seems to be spreading to the promotion. Most excitingly, the Topps bubblegum card repros that introduced us to the names of some of the characters of The Force Awakens. This certainly took me back to the days of collecting stickers and trying to piece the Star Wars universe together through forensic archaeological quests of magazine racks and doctors' waiting rooms. It brought back a lot of happy memories, and like The Force, also awakened some. I remember one afternoon in the early 80s, I was 8 and I was in the kitchen with my oldest brother. A sunny day, the door was open, church bells and birdsong drifted in. It was the 6-week school holiday. We were doing the washing up, and as I'm the younger brother, I was drying. When we went about our chores, we listened to Radio 1, the UK's main pop music station. Well, at least it was back then. However, on this day, between the latest hits by Blondie and Adam and the Ants, a new radio play came on. A radio play called Star Wars. At the time, I don't think I knew it was a play. I just thought they were playing the film on the radio. I'm pretty sure I only heard that one episode, other holiday fun distracting me, no doubt, but somehow it was tucked away there in my head, waiting to come back to me. I'm certain over the years that the play did indeed wash up on the shore of my memories, seeing the script book and CDs reviewed, hearing a mention here and there, but never really gave it much thought. And here we are in the now, to me, looking once more for fragments of the saga's past, coupled with my love of listening to audiobooks and podcasts on my journey to work, I downloaded the Star Wars radio play and decided to see, well, hear, if it was just the film on the radio. It wasn't. The Star Wars radio play was produced in America by National Public Radio, or NPR, a non-profit broadcaster syndicating cultural content across the states. The rights to produce the plays was sold to NPR by Lucasfilm for $1 a movie. Other than Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels, all the characters in A New Hope were recast. And it has to be said, although a little odd to begin with, you soon accept the new company, and as it's audio, you certainly see the film cast. The plays are dramatised from the films by Brian Daley, who already had a grounding in the Star Wars universe, creating a range of Han Solo books at the time of the original trilogy. As the films are very much a visual feast, Daley weaves in a set of new audio narratives, both original and from unused scenes and scripted elements, which have also found their ways into the original Marvel comic adaptation and as extras on the Blu-ray releases. What these scenes do is change the balance of the original trilogy, and also link them more closely to certain content in the prequels that many fans dislike. I'll come back to that idea though, because there are also links with the new film. We have a central cast of young heroes in The Force Awakens, as we did in the original, but there are some scenes in the radio play that feel more akin to George Lucas's earlier film, American Graffiti. The first few episodes of the radio play take place before the start of the film, and we have a number of scenes with Luke and his friends down at the Toshi station. Yeah, we get to experience Luke wasting time with his friends after his chores were done. The scenes are glee-like and would make many Star Wars fans cringe. But I think the young cast in the new film may have more in common with Luke and his mates sharing a bit of banter, at least to start with anyway. The biggie, however, is the politics. Yes, this is the theme that rears its head in the prequels and got so many fans' knickers in a twist. But the radio play is full of it. There's even room for Shakespearean treachery among the Empire hierarchy, such as Admiral Motti and Governor Tarkin discussing the use of the Death Star against the Emperor himself. Lord Vader has no such desires, however, and is the complete disciple of his master. We even spend time with Senator Organa and his daughter Leia on Alderaan, dining with Imperial bigwig Lord Tyon, which leads to the discovery of just how the rebels got their hands on those Death Star plans. A depth is certainly added to Vader, Leia and Alderaan in the plays, which I wouldn't be surprised will be revisited in Marvel's February and March releases for those specific characters. The politics is mentioned at exceptionally bureaucratic levels in the Empire Strikes Back adaptation, which I'm currently listening to, when Vader points out just how much the Imperials' attack on Hoth is costing the Empire financially. The Dark Lord's work is never done. I think my favourite part comes right at the beginning of the first episode, in which Luke is listening to an Imperial recruitment advert. This links very much to the Join the Imperial Fleet posters that are scattered round the spaceports seen in animated show Star Wars Rebels, a beautiful and clever link. All too often do I see scaremonger theories that the rebels in Star Wars are terrorists and a parallel to the unthinkable and heartbreaking activities that are part of today's society. Well, for me, the propaganda recruitment techniques and the Empire Day celebration seen in Rebels, sure, we can clearly see this is a number of worlds and societies coming together to overthrow a tyrannical leader and his brainwashed confidence. I'll return to the themes of the radio plays as I enrich myself further, but already they clearly represent to me the true original trilogy special editions.
Hey there, Who Wars, this is M.A. Tamburo, the director-producer of Doctor Who Dark Journey, the free audio drama from AM Audio Media. And I'm here today with...
Andrew Chalmers from Doctor Who Dark Journey.
Andrew Chalmers, who do you play in Doctor Who Dark Journey?
I play the title character, Sherlock Holmes. Oh, no, sorry.
No.
He won the award.
Yeah, he won the award.
Yeah. Sorry, I believe
you're
the
other
title
guy.
Character is actually the Doctor, a.k.a. Yes. Doctor Who, but who knows, recent developments behind the scenes... people taking the limelight, etc. I'll say no more about it.
Say no more about it. You know, well, we're here today. We're going to talk about the exciting Whomash contest on WhoWars.net. Now, we've already done our own Whomash.
Yes.
We've done Sherlock Holmes meets Doctor Who, or
absolutely.
Doctor Who meets Sherlock Holmes.
Or Sherlock Holmes meets Sherlock Holmes.
Now, I know there's a contest going on. I know that there's all kinds of great swag that you can win. You can win
swag.
MP3 player.
Beautiful.
TARDIS key.
Beautiful.
TARDIS keychain.
Beautiful.
There's a phone cover.
Enchanting.
There's posters. There's all kinds
luxurious.
Of postcards. All kinds of great stuff that you can win.
Sexy.
Just by tweeting out your Whomash.
That's all you have to do.
Tweet out Whomash. Whomash.
Low output to me, but whatever.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not a lot to do to get a lot of fantastic, one-of-a-kind stuff that might be mass-produced.
But we're generous kind of guys, along with the good people at...
Just call us Santa.
The good people at the WhoWars.net
Who
podcast.
Wars. Australian, I believe.
Yes, it is. Ah. Yes, it is. Hosted by Rob Irwin and his Who crew.
Very professionally done.
It is very professionally
done. I've
listened
done. To their stuff. I love it. It's very yeah. pro. Well,
that's a little bit meta because we're on it right now.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I see. I see. Well, hopefully we don't lower the standards. Well...
So, now we were talking before about some fantastic ideas for our own Whomashes.
Yes.
So, going in the vein of Doctor Who meets Sherlock Holmes and
gross.
Some of the other fantastic... Huh?
Vein. I don't like the whole vein thing. Don't worry, I'm squeamish.
No, I think it's spelled differently.
I don't like
don't worry
throaty
about
stuff.
It. I know you don't like throaty stuff. Is that a quote from the series one?
That's a quote from episode one of Sherlock Holmes.
Meets Doctor Who.
Yeah, starring Roy. I log the limelight.
Listen,
Miranda.
Listen. Just because he won the Audioverse Award for Best Actor.
I wrote it.
Did you win an award for it?
No, I was nominated.
So what are some of your ideas?
And for that nomination, I'd like to thank my immediate family.
So my Whomash
yep.
would be Mash Mash. Mash Mash, the classic 70s TV serial. You've got Klinger.
Very Klinger, in the news at the
he's
moment.
He's in space. He hops into the TARDIS, does a quick costume change into a lady. We've got our first female doctor.
Oh,
yeah.
Now I see. You're bringing it, Missy Mash.
Exactly.
Female
so it's like
doctor?
It's like a Mash Mash, a Who Mash.
Okay.
You got any good mashes? Any
yeah.
good Who Mashes for us?
Yep. Yes, Strax racing greyhounds in Victorian London.
Okay, all right. Okay,
right? That's
okay.
pretty good. He's
could Tom Selleck be in it?
You
know, he was originally cast as Lando Calrissian.
Yes, he was.
My Star Wars knowledge is a little bit rusty, but I do know certain facts.
He was, yes. And Lando Calrissian was originally cast as Indiana Jones.
Lando Calrissian was originally Indiana Jones?
Originally. There are posters where Lando is there.
Like with a cape and everything?
With a cape and, you know, that whole Molly Cabba
thing. The mustache
thing.
Yeah,
it didn't get off
was
the ground.
Was his droid guy with him?
Yeah, the droid guy.
On all the adventures?
Yeah, I think he was called Lobot. If
yeah,
I'm not
he was.
Mistaken.
Yeah, he was called Lobot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a trap.
Yeah.
That's my admirable. That's my admirable.
That was an admiral Akbar.
Akbar.
Okay.
It's a trap.
Admiral Akbar.
Sounds like Joe Costanza.
Admiral Akbar.
Yeah.
And Sarah Jane Smith
cool.
having adventures in outer space.
Yeah, that would be good. Am I getting paid for this?
No.
Roy was. So I heard.
I don't really know about that. That's more of a production decision, which I'm kind of out of the loop as.
You're the producer. You know what would be good?
What would be great? What would
is, be good is a match? Really good, a serious idea.
Okay.
Capaldi.
Yeah.
Or the 12th Doctor and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Okay.
I could just see them kind of getting on.
Yeah. Probably talking about theater.
Yeah.
Just like having tea together.
Yeah, having tea and talking about, I did the Danish play, Lovey. Is there any more Earl Grey?
Okay. I was thinking about this earlier today, and I think that we should do a Gilligan's Island Doctor Who mashup.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The Gilligan is the Doctor. Right. They've got a lot in common. Yeah, he's eccentric. Yeah. He's always bumbling around, making mistakes.
Okay.
He's getting people ending up in the wrong place, the wrong time.
The Master could be Thurston Howell.
Why would the Master be Thurston Howell?
Because he's elitist and he's got a lot of money.
Wouldn't he be the professor making stuff out of coconuts, like radios out of coconuts and stuff?
No, I thought the prof was always kind of like cool. Like he was like the cool guy.
A cool guy? He was
the
a
professor.
Nerd. What are you
talking
about?
He looked kind of... He could have been like a secret agent, I always thought. Like in another show. Like he didn't look like a nerd. He actually looked like a pretty kind of like, you know, like he could be like an American James Bond.
Did you know that they were originally thinking of casting him as the American Doctor in the 70s?
Do you know that on a slightly... On a side note...
By the way, that thing about the professor?
Yeah.
That's a lie.
Okay. I thought so, but it was delivered with... conviction.
Thank you. Yeah, well, it was great to talk to you today about the Who Mash ideas.
It was lovely.
And
lovely.
It's a shame, you know, we were trying to get Roy Miranda with us today, but star of Doctor Who Dark Journey as Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
We couldn't schedule him.
The star.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Trouble there.
Busy.
He's busy. He's busy.
Probably busy, and I'm sat in a van in Canada in January, but Miranda's off doing his
thing. Which makes it cold.
Yes, it does.
Dear listeners.
Yes, it does. Dear listeners. Cheeky. Yes, exactly, yeah. Where is he?
He's on set somewhere. I don't know. I tried to get through to him. His agent wouldn't put me through. So
as you can see him, if you can get past the groupies.
Yeah,
I imagine. Yeah.
But Roy Miranda said to give his regards to all the WhoWars.net listeners.
Very kind.
Yeah.
Very
and,
kind. Is he reading from a script that I wrote, or is he ad-libbing his own lines? That's silence. That's me saying silence. Right there.
That was deep.
It was deep.
Deep silence.
That was a deep silence.
That was like, that sounds like a Stephen Moffat like story title. Deep silence.
Deep silence. Don't come into my deep silence. You might drown.
Yeah, or there might be giant squid things attached to your face.
Yes.
That look
kind of they're just
like
from aliens.
They're just.
I'll write this in season 3 when I'm writing new stuff for Sherlock. My first episode is going to be called "Hogging the Limelight," and it's just going to have Roy Miranda doing every role possible.
Oh, did you hear about that? His stage play?
Yeah, the one-man show?
Yeah, the one-man show. I was hoping that you wouldn't read the press, but...
No.
Yeah.
It's okay. I've been asked if I'm the intern for the production.
Basically, Roy Miranda, star of Doctor Who Dark Journey, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
He's basically doing a one-man play of Dark Journey.
Yeah, why not?
He's playing all the parts.
Yeah. Composing.
Yeah.
Doing everything. He's doing
music,
well. He's
singing.
Who can be a better doctor
he's
than
dancing,
the guy who wrote
and
it?
He is good.
He's
he
great.
He is really good.
I wouldn't rain on his award-winning
I know some of the
parade.
Other cast would have liked to have been involved. I know that you were kind of hoping that you would get to do the script and it wouldn't have been a farce comedy.
It's been
done as. I mean, it's a style. It's
a style.
Yeah.
Yeah,
are you
okay
with it being kind
like
of
wearing a colostomy bag is a style?
Yeah.
Where's Miranda?
Hey, look at who it is.
Oh, it's Susanna.
Roy Miranda. Roy, is that you? Listen, Roy, we're doing a thing for the WhoWars.net podcast, and we just want to get your great idea for a Who Mash.
Oh, do I ask who? I'm a bit busy right now. Have you spoken to my agent?
Well, we got through to her, and she wouldn't put our call through to you, so...
Yeah, but there's a reason, isn't there?
Well,
now, listen to me. I am an award-winning actor, and I can no longer put up with this crap amateurism with you two. Yes, I know you said your writer's suicidal, but that's not my problem.
All right, so we'll see you at the rap party then?
If you could actually send the check that you promised in the mail, then maybe I'll talk to you. But you two tight tossers, I can't really put up with it anymore, to be honest. I'm going to have to go, because you really are a pair of irritating dumbasses, as you say here in North America.
Well, thanks for talking to us today, Roy.
If you call it talking, but anyway, just bugger off.
All right, cheers, buddy.
Well, piss off. Bye.
It's good to hear from him, man. Eh?
Yeah, that was nice.
Yeah, it's good.
That worked out really well.
Glad he's doing well, yeah.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, it's just so easy to win. All that you have to do is hop onto Twitter and use the hashtag WhoMash and plug in your favorite genre WhoMash. It could be Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes. It could be Star Wars and Doctor Who. Those might already be taken. But if you have a good one, hop onto Twitter and tell us what it is. Winners are going to be announced on February 8th right here on this podcast. For the ultimate WhoMash audio drama, check out amaudiomedia.com and download our episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, and Player FM.
Hi, Who Wars listeners. So these past 2 weeks, there was an 11th Doctor comic. It was very good, as usual. It has a cool cover. The cover, however, was a bit misleading. The Doctor doesn't jump on top of a spaceship at any point during the comic. Sorry to disappoint. But it's still cool to look at. And it's also funny that the driver of the spaceship also has blue feathers. I don't know if that's a reference to maybe a future episode of the comic, but there's no blue-feathered alien, I guess I should say, in this episode. I thought that was peculiar. It's a cool cover, nonetheless, though, and the inside is just as cool. So in this issue, it isn't just one spaceship. It's all the spaceships. All of the spaceships in the sky above London, and people are sitting outside on their roofs and enjoying the spectacle at night as if it was some kind of celebratory fireworks display. Luckily, these aliens at war don't confront Earth. This is just one of those everlasting wars that has been going on for eons. Even the Doctor learned about it when he was at the Academy as a kid. So I guess they're not really interested in Earth, they're just interested in fighting each other. And hey, I haven't introduced who is actually fighting. It's these two aliens. Am I allowed to call them aliens? What do I say? Races? I don't know. The Amstrons and then the Gerodics. I don't know. I'm butchering these pronunciations probably. But I'm going with that. The Amstrons and the Gerodics. One of them kind of looks like birds, and that's the Gerodic Federation. And then the other one are the Amstrons of the Great Wheel. Those guys, the Amstrons, look like Centaurans, except they have no expression. They're kind of like those expressionless plastic dolls that have blue eyes and like the red mouth, and when you squeeze them, they kind of pop out. It looks like that, but without the colors. They're all gold, and they look like little potato heads. And then the Gerodic are the big birds, which I guess the cover, the alien in the spaceship, is probably supposed to represent one of these Gerodic guys. Except, you know, the wrong color. They're the wrong color. The one on the cover is blue, and then the one on the inside of the comic shows them as red. Maybe they come in different colors. That's cool. That's all good. So there's this everlasting war, and this time Alice is actually sort of separate from the adventure, although she's a key element in the end when she appears with someone quite surprising, and that happens by another surprising factor. We have a guest appear that is from a classic Time Lord era, I believe. So that should be cool. It's not explained. We're going to find out next issue. Also, another funny thing, Jones has a peculiar eating disorder, it appears. He's eating everything, and, well, mostly just food. Ark is eating everything. Ark ate a chaise lounge. Ark ate a piece of furniture in this issue, but I have a feeling that's just kind of his normal appetite. Jones, however, something peculiar is going on with Jones, and I'm very interested to find out what happens next with that. I think it's like some kind of parasite or something growing inside him. Kind of, gross. Cool, and those are my impressions of this issue. A lot of fun, good adventure. There's some jetpack flying, and Ark is definitely becoming my favorite character of this series of comics. The way he started out, I never would have expected for him to be this prominent a character, and I'm so glad he is. He has some of the best lines. So it's worth reading just to see this new character arc. He is a superb companion. I'm so pleased. The humor in this issue, or no, the whole series of comics, is so kooky. I love it. So check it out so you know what I'm talking about when I review. And I'll talk to you laters. Bye.
I've got to say, I was going to start this review by reading out the previously in the Swords of Kali section of the current issue of the comic, which is a very nice condensed paragraph. And I actually learned more in that paragraph about what happened in the last issue than I did from reading the last issue. Because I really don't honestly think this story is gelling with me. It's like my mind's rejecting it, and reading it is quite tricky and difficult, which I think I might go into later. So as for the actual story and issue, it starts with a flashback, but it's straight in with the flashback. We don't know who's having the flashback and who's talking about it and when it is. But a few frames in, awkwardly, so you know, because you're already starting the voices in your head, haven't you? You want to do the right voices. So a few frames in, we find out that it's Rani having the flashback, the renegade Amazon warrior, and she's talking of her love affair with the daughter of a wealthy spice merchant, and it's a lovely young lady called Kahir Unnisa Kapoor, and she, Rani was the bodyguard for this woman. Now, perhaps this will come back, this story, later on, this flashback, but the Doctor cuts it short. Probably the most interesting part of the comic this month, I think. Because I think this is, it's definitely a middle issue. It's a right plod fest. We had a promising cliffhanger at the end of last issue. Instead of resolving the cliffhanger, it really just sort of ekes it out and sort of elongates it, and it feels like we're in slow motion, really. So we've got the Doctor and Rani are wandering around some Indiana Jones-style set piece. They're in the past. They're in 1825, I believe. And there's these eerie flying demon heads going around this big Indiana Jones-type thing, which is all quite exciting and stuff. And then the Doctor, he killjoys it again, and soon fobs them off as being something else. We also catch up with our second cliffhanger, which is in the future, in the same location, and that is Clara and Priyanka are being pursued by the orc-like thugies, the creatures introduced at the end last time, which the Skindia family transform into, if you remember. And they run to the safety of the TARDIS, but Clara is caught, but she spectacularly throws the keys of the TARDIS to Priyanka to save herself. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Rani have managed to release a further horde of thuggies who all chant, "For Kali! For Kali!" So we've completely got thuggies all over the place in both time zones. The TARDIS and her new lone passenger, Priyanka, are transported to the Doctor and Rani just as things are hotting up with the thuggie attack. Safely in the TARDIS, they return to Tiger Maratha's apartment. Now, Tiger was the Doctor's deceased friend, if you remember, who got them there in the first place, and Priyanka's father. And here we find a message from him. And this is where Tiger fills in some gaps for us. Just why is he working for the Skindia family? And it turns out he's helping them look for the Swords of Kali. And Kali, it turns out, is the Hindu goddess of death and destruction. Now, this next bit, we have got fleets of spaceships leaving the overcrowded streets of India to Skandia's spaceship Haven, which is basically some kind of utopian housing scheme, although I think there's probably more to it. Clara's been taken by the thuggie to the Skandias, and using Clara's phone, they ring the Doctor, and then the Doctor and his travelling companions, Priyanka and Rani, all go to the Skindia's stronghold. Now, this turns out is a bit of a trap because, of course, Tiger's passed on. He hadn't actually finished finding the swords. So what they've done here is they've stuck Clara underneath the spaceships that are leaving for Haven, underneath the jets, you know, like in a Bond-style type thing, as blackmail for the Doctor to make him complete Tiger's quest. And, of course, he says, yes, of course I'll do it. But then, safe from that trap, Clara's put straight into more danger, and she's shoved into the Indiana Jones set, and she's gassed. And this is our cliffhanger, because when she emerges from this tomb of gas, well, let's just say we've ended on a regeneration of sorts. It seems quite a complex story breaking the scenes down like this, but it really isn't. It seems to be deliberately keeping itself simple and fairly original. A lot of the treats are left to our imaginations. I mean, why aren't we seeing the crowded streets we're hearing so much about of India? We've already got a grounding of this kind of thing in our own contemporary world through films and documentaries. And just, you know, these is quite a sparsely cast comic, considering they're talking about overcrowding all the time. Some frames set in these crowded streets would be really good, and we could get some really colourful and eccentric characters in there. Really good. Another problem with this particular 12th Doctor comic series is it's running alongside a really amazing new 10th Doctor comic strip. I don't want to tread on any toes, but if you heard Kate talking passionately about the new 10th Doctor comics last podcast, there's a reason she was so passionate. They've got beautiful detailed art, stunning storylines, great characters, genuine terror with the Weeping Angels, a desire to actually find out more about this really important part of history. The Swords of Kali can't compete. Yeah, the artwork and the colour is consistent in this issue, but it still seems rushed and lacking depth and detail, and the story itself isn't gripping. The episode is certainly a filler. I think it also suffers with the 12th Doctor's persona and character still developing, whereas with the 10th Doctor on TV, he's got a beginning and end, so it's easier to use his vocab and mannerisms. The 12th Doctor's still baking, so he's really not realised fantastically. I'm sure the series will find its feet and settle down, so still worth sticking with, but the 10th Doctor series right at this moment in time seems streets ahead, and the 12th Doctor needs to play catch up. Right, secret little ending to this review is I'm hoping to catch up with a good friend of mine in the next few days who's a huge Marvel Comics fan, and together we're going to have a look at this beautiful thing, which is the Star Wars Marvel comic issue number one. I've got my issue quite late, and I'm not going to review it right now, but I'm just going to urge people, go out and get it, because you're going to be part of it's part of a remarkable event. This is a beautiful number one issue of a comic. There's hundreds of variant covers. I've only bought two of them, but there are so many different ones. It's just a precious thing. I'll tell you now, the artwork's stunning. The story's great. The detail of the characters is brilliant. The references are fantastic. And I'll tell you, at the back, you also get a sneak preview of the Darth Vader comic, which the artwork in that seems to even go up a further notch. But then they knock you in a totally different direction with the preview of the artwork for the Princess Leia issue, which has got a much quirkier, more kooky style of drawing. So it's going to be a comic book that's going to be very appreciated by different audiences, I think. But be part of this amazing thing with this new Star Wars film coming out and part of the journey. This issue one of a comic is a brilliant thing to own, whether you're going to collect them all or read them or not. And I can't wait to talk to my mate John about them and hopefully bring you that report soon.
Hey everybody, it's me, Kate. I'm back this week for another fan interview. This time I sat down with my good friend Kandra, and we fangirl flailed for about 20 minutes about Star Wars and Doctor Who. I hope you enjoy it. So I'm here with my friend Kandra, and we've been friends a long time. We've been friends probably since we were, what, 5 or 6?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, so welcome to Who Wars.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so let's get into it. Since this is a Star Wars Doctor Who podcast, I'd like to start with the question, Star Wars or Doctor Who, which is your favorite?
Well, I believe in a world where Star Wars and Doctor Who can coexist peacefully, and that you do not need to claim a favorite between the two.
Oh, okay. That I have not had that response yet, so congratulations.
I also believe Star Trek can be in there, too.
Yeah, but Star Trek forever! Have you ever seen those coexist stickers? Like,
yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, people.
All right, so since you didn't pick a favorite, we're going to talk about both of them. Let's start with Doctor Who.
Okay.
Who's your favorite Doctor?
I would say... I'm a little torn on that one as well. I before this current season, I would have definitely, without hesitation, said Tennant. But now, having seen Capaldi in all of his glory, I'm actually, they're pretty much neck and neck for me.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Tennant's still my favorite, but I really did enjoy Capaldi this season. Yes. Are you totally up to date on this series?
I have not seen the finale yet.
Oh, no. That was like the main thing we were supposed to talk about.
Crap, why did you tell me that?
No, I'm just kidding. Oh. No, we got plenty of other stuff we can talk about.
All right.
Okay, so what was it that drew you to Doctor Who in the first place?
I actually remember watching it when I was, I don't know, I want to say like 8. It was on PBS.
Nice.
I think it was the Tom Baker years is what
awesome.
I remember. And I didn't really see a whole lot of episodes of it, but just every once in a while I would manage to stay up late enough without mom and dad knowing, and I would get to watch it. And I don't know, it just always seemed funny and adventurous. Cool. And
the jelly babies.
Space and yeah, jelly babies and long crazy scarves. So what's not to say?
Totally. And so when the new series started, were you one of the ones that jumped right on board with that from the start?
It was kind of a similar thing that happened. I didn't realize that the series had been picked up again until I happened to end up on PBS again. PBS is apparently our equivalent to the BBC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that you were watching it well before I started, because I started when they put them all on Netflix, and I basically binge watched up until, you know, there was somewhere in the 10th or the 11th Doctor where I started watching up to date, you know.
Oh,
so you had been like telling me all about it, and oh, you need to watch it, and I was like, yeah, yeah, whatever, and I didn't listen to you.
Now you know.
I know. I should have listened.
You should always listen to me.
So, as far as companions go, who's your favorite?
I would say probably first would be Rose.
Ah, yeah.
With Donna as a close second, actually.
Donna was pretty funny.
Yeah.
I'm appreciating Donna a lot more because I've been listening to some audiobooks that feature her.
Oh, really?
That actually have Catherine Tate reading them, too.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, she's a pretty hilarious lady.
And then, of course, when she was on The Office, the U.S. version.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. That was pretty hilarious.
Yes.
She is just so funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so as far as villains, do you have a favorite villain from Doctor Who?
I would have to say the Master.
Oh, nice.
Which is ironic, because I have seen part, you know, I saw last week's episode.
Okay.
Weeks, but
because
you know.
I was like, oh, do I spoil it for her or not?
No, I know Missy is the Master.
Okay, spoiler alert if anybody hasn't watched up to date yet.
Oh, yes. Oh, sorry.
I think, you know, it's funny because that's basically what everybody thought anyway. It wasn't really that much of a surprise. And
I totally did not. I
really?
Was like so confused as to what was going on, but it was partly because. And I was like going to go back and watch the episode that I was thinking of, but the one that was called The Doctor's Wife, but it was the TARDIS that they were referring to as his wife.
Right.
I kept thinking that was the same woman.
What the heck? The one where it was like all steam, she was like all steampunk dressed and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not as far as I remember, but like there's similar enough that
one of the theories, I think. So do you have a favorite episode? Or moment?
Favorites are so hard for me.
Oh man.
I'm an indecisive person.
Okay, it doesn't have to be your favorite. How about just one that you that stands out to you or that you remember?
Well, probably one of the most memorable is obviously when Tennant, his last one.
Aww,
because it was so heartbreaking. But I actually really like the Robin Hood episode.
Oh my gosh, I love that one. That's one of my favorites.
It's so funny.
That was good. That guy that played Robin Hood, man.
I know.
I hope he comes back. That'd be cool. For the series 8, was there any certain episodes that you particularly liked?
For this, the current?
In addition to the Robin Hood one, yeah.
I also liked the Galactic Bank one, or whatever that one was called.
Oh, the bank heist, or time
yes.
heist?
Yes.
Yeah, that was funny.
That one was really cool. Even though That one didn't. I knew he was the architect from the very beginning, but it was funny.
I am a big sci fan. How about you?
Yes, yes. He should be the next companion.
That's what I said. That would be so funny to have him. Maybe we'll see what happens. I won't spoil the finale for you or anything, but I think I think Clara is on her way out. You know.
Well, I'm pretty sure she is. I mean, I think that's the official hubbub. Is that
true? That
this is supposed to be like basically her last season, as far as I knew. But
yeah, I think.
And I know these things, you know.
Yes, you are all knowing.
Yes.
Of course. Okay, so any other final thoughts about Doctor Who before we move on to Star Wars?
Just that Doctor Who is a good way to determine who will be your friend. Or how it's a good way to make new friends.
That's
because
true.
If you walk into a group of people and you make some obscure Doctor Who reference, anybody that reacts to that is your new friend.
There you go. That's so true. It's like an instant bond.
It is. Doctor Who brings people together.
That is a lovely sentiment. And so true.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to Star Wars.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. So we asked an interesting question on the show a while back. Not necessarily who's your favorite character, although I will ask you that later.
Okay.
But what if you were in the Star Wars universe, what character would you like to be?
Han Solo.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, that was fast. So,
Han Solo.
Do you care to elaborate on that any?
He's a renegade. And he's got, he's got a walking carpet as his best friend, so.
That is a good point.
Yeah, I mean, and that it's kind of funny because on the Star Wars question as to who my favorite character is,
yeah, you just jump right in there.
It's Han Solo. He is my favorite character. I probably should preface that I am not like I am old school Star Wars in the sense that like I don't really follow any of the new cartoon, the animated series, or anything like that. I don't.
Even after I told you to.
I know.
You've never watched Clone Wars or Rebels?
I have watched a few episodes of Clone Wars, but I watched so much TV.
Yeah. Got a long queue there.
Yes, it gets lost in the shuffle. But all the movies, I've definitely seen all of them, and yeah.
So, what's your earliest Star Wars memory?
Earliest Star Wars memory would probably have to be I don't necessarily know exactly what age I was, but Sonya, my sister, was the one that introduced me to Star Wars.
I need to jump in for a second here. Oh. Because that's also how I found out about Star Wars. My earliest memory was Sonya, and she was watching The Empire Strikes Back, and it was the scene where Han cuts open the Tauntaun. That's my first Star Wars memory.
Yes, I know. Sonya and I have always felt a little guilty about your Star Wars obsession because we felt responsible for it.
Yeah, you guys totally are. Thank you for that, though.
You're welcome.
But yeah, do you remember that? And then that was like right before the re-releases in the late 90s came out. And I wanted, I didn't want to watch them all. I wanted to wait to see it on the big screen.
Yes.
So that's what we did.
And I think that's why I think that's why she was watching. She had just bought the original versions, non-remastered. She just bought a box set.
Oh, cool.
On VHS, of all things.
Nice.
And
back in the 90s, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think that's why we were watching them with you, was because
for some reason, it was just like that one scene that we watched. And I was like, I want to watch this from the start.
Yes. And I think that maybe that's why she was watching them, was because the remastered versions were going to start being released. And so she was like, we should watch the original one so we know it's different, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. I think I remember something about that. Who is your favorite bad guy in Star Wars?
Darth Vader.
Nice.
If you can really call him a bad guy.
Yeah, he does redeem himself.
Yes. He sort of is he's just a misunderstood man.
I took the Zimbio quiz, you know, and it said I was Darth Vader.
I think I got Han Solo.
Oh, funny. Wow, I think Zimbio knows something we don't know.
I think so.
Oh, what's your favorite Star Wars movie? Or do you have one?
See, again, that one is a little bit harder. It would probably definitely be one of the original three.
Not a prequel fan?
I don't mind the prequels.
Are you pro Jar Jar?
Yeah, I'm kind of indifferent to Jar Jar. I am neither for nor against.
Okay.
I am Switzerland when it comes to Jar Jar. I don't know.
I think I'm the minority. I don't love him, but I do kind of like him.
I mean, he's definitely comedic relief, which is something that is necessary. So, I don't know. I feel like he's necessary, but
Do you think we'll see him in the new trilogy at all?
Possibly.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah,
I don't know if
they would take
that.
The chance on that.
Yeah, JJ seems like he's kind of steering clear of the prequels.
Yeah, he's like, no, we're not.
Yeah,
that doesn't need to be a part of this universe. But I am not necessarily. I mean, the prequels, I feel like they're necessary. I feel like they tell a necessary
Absolutely.
Part of the story. But. Yeah. The adventure happens in the original three, you know?
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and it kind of makes sense that Lucas started with the three that he did start with, because it's like, that's where the adventure happens. So that's where you're going to build up fans.
So I have a crazy theory about, you know, did you hear about the new title?
No.
The Force Awakens.
What?
That's episode 7.
What?
You didn't hear that? Don't you go on the internet?
I don't use the internet. I told you, I'm watching too much TV.
Okay, so we got to talk about this for a little while.
Okay.
So that's the official title, but it's just Star Wars: The Force Awakens, right?
Right.
Oh, you didn't know that, but
I do now, though.
But Episode 7 is actually not in the title. So what if JJ starts, like, what if he's trying to do what Lucas did with, like, 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and instead of 7, like, it's only episode 7 because it's the 7th movie. What if it's actually the 10th movie and it goes 10, 11, 12, and then the next trilogy goes 7, 8, 9? What?
JJ Abrams, you crazy.
Well, that's, I don't know if he's doing that or not.
But that would be crazy.
I know, that would, huh?
It does kind of make you wonder why it hasn't been officially labeled as episode 7. That's weird. Although, well, I mean, I guess. I was going to say, but I mean.
Blow your mind.
A little bit. My mind has been a tiny bit blown. I was thinking, I mean, because it's been confirmed that, like, there'll be cameos from all the original.
Right. Yeah.
So I wonder if that would put it too far out of the timeline.
Well, see, it's supposed to be like 30 years in the future.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true, I guess.
Although, maybe that, you know, because I don't know if you know, have you seen the cast, like Daisy Ridley and John Boyega? Mm-hmm. I don't, they'd have to cast different people, I guess.
Yeah.
But they would still be in this. Oh, that would be for the next trilogy, though, if what I'm saying is true.
Right.
So I guess it could still work.
Hmm.
But, you know, that's part of the fun, right? Just
exactly.
Guessing about, we still got over a year. We got plenty of time to guess and come up with our theories and stuff. So, yeah, what do you think about the title, though, The Force Awakens?
It seems confusing.
Right?
I mean, it seems like a mystery, which I'm sure is what he's intending.
Exactly.
Because, like, what do you mean, awakens?
We thought the Force was already awake.
Exactly. Maybe there's a Triforce.
Ooh.
Maybe he's pulling some Zelda action into this.
Oh, nice. I had conjectured that perhaps, you know, we're just assuming that it's the Force, you know, like, may the Force be with you.
Right.
It could just be referring to, like, a general force or, like, a military force or something like that, and be totally unexpected plot twist.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that I was a little not excited that Disney was taking over the franchise until it was revealed that J.J. Abrams would be directing. Then it was like, okay, it'll be fine.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I was actually, when they first made the announcement, I was hoping for Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been amazing.
My good Lord. I don't think we would survive if he directed these.
That would have been totally awesome.
I think our brains literally would have exploded if that happened. Something you said about conjecture. We have over a year for conjecture. I apparently do not do very well with conjecture because, going back to Doctor Who, for the 50th anniversary episode, who the Dark Doctor was, mm-hmm. I totally had it all. I can't remember what my theory was that was going to end up being the first Doctor, technically, who he was before he became the Doctor.
Right.
Because he obviously was fighting a war, but I was wrong. So, but yeah, so any conjecture I have about Star Wars will probably all be wrong.
Okay, so I have another question. It can be for Doctor Who or Star Wars, really. But, okay. Or what sort of things have you done to express your fandom with Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Well, for the 50th anniversary episode of Doctor Who, we had a party here where I dressed up as Tom Baker's Doctor.
Nice.
And I couldn't get jelly babies on such short notice because I would have to order them online.
I showed you my jelly babies of horror, right?
Jelly babies. but I got Sour Patch Kids and had them in a brown paper. Nice. And I just wrote jelly babies on the outside of it.
That works. They're jellyish and they're like kids. Exactly. Yeah.
I have actually perused through like hundreds of Doctor Who inspired like wallpapers and stuff on a website called Spoonflower.
Cool.
That lets you you can actually design your own wallpaper, and so it was a bunch of other user created.
That's
content
fun.
And they're amazing, and I would buy all of them except that they're expensive. But
do you mean like actual wallpaper for your wall?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant like for your computer.
Oh no. Well, that would have made more sense.
I was like, oh.
But no, actual like wallpaper, or you can buy fabric and
that's neat.
Yeah. Not that I have any abilities with either of those mediums, but I cool. obsessively look through them. I would say that's probably about as far as I go with my fandom.
So, have you ever done any other cosplay besides Tom Baker's Doctor?
No. Well, except for you and I did dress up as Sith Lords one time and documented it.
Oh my goodness. Thanks for bringing that up. No, I actually think I might have posted that on Twitter a while ago.
I posted pictures of it on Facebook a while ago.
Oh,
I just looked across them and I'm like, yeah.
That was pretty cool. Didn't I do Queen Amidala at 1.2?
I think you did for something. I can't remember what it was for, though.
It was like we just were doing it for fun.
Oh. The only photo documentation I have is of the Sith Lords.
I have a picture somewhere of the Queen Amidala. I should look for that. So, do you have any final thoughts about either Star Wars or Doctor Who?
Nope. Other than my previous statement that I believe we can live in a world where all sci-fi franchises can peacefully coexist. And no one should be forced to choose.
Absolutely.
I believe that's the world that, you know, these characters would strive for.
One more question.
Okay.
Do you have any impressions that you do?
No.
Aww.
Then talking backwards, but not even in a Yoda voice.
Man,
your
brother Jeremy does a really good Chewbacca.
Yes, I did not inherit his Chewbacca skills, unfortunately. His
Dang.
Son has, however. Samuel does a mean Chewbacca
awesome.
Impression.
That's funny. So, I think that's going to do it for this time. Well, thanks for being on the show.
No problem.
Come back anytime.
Woohoo!
All right. On three, do you want to say with me, LLZ and may the force be with you? That's
okay.
Like my catchphrase. Okay.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay.
One, two, three.
Elancy,
and may the force be with you. All right. Later, folks. Bye, Kendra.
Bye.
Okay, then. Congratulations. You've made it to the end of the 22nd Who Wars. My thanks, as always, to the team of Rev, Lex, and Kate for bringing us such interesting content week after week, augmenting what I can do sitting here in my hot little studio here in Sydney. You guys are a fantastic team. You make interesting stuff. Keep it up. And also my thanks to the AM Media people for putting together that little presentation during the episode. I hope everyone out there is putting entries into our Who Wars competition. Just tell us what kind of Doctor Who mashup you'd like to see. Doctor Who plus might be Doctor Who and Gumby. It might be Doctor Who meets James Dean. I don't know, but throw it out there on Twitter with the hashtag Whomash, Whomash. This is very important. This is how we find the entries as they come in. And that's all you have to do. Just tell us a very cool Doctor Who mashup with the hashtag Whomash. It will be judged, and the winners will receive some very, very cool AM audio media prizes. So please, it's free. Get into it. Doctor Who fans, what are you waiting for? All right, then. That's it for this episode. The ways to get in touch with us are in the closing credits. Again, thank you to all you people who are following us on Facebook this week. That's just amazing. I wonder how high we can get the number of followers. Hopefully as high as Twitter. Hopefully up into the thousands. That would be very cool. But I digress. We'll see you again in 2 weeks' time. Who Wars is now a fortnightly show. And if you have anything to say, do please get in touch. Tell us what you think. Submit some pieces for the show. Details on how to do that are on the whowars.net website. I'm rambling at this point, I know. Let me just hit play on these closing credits and I'll be out of your ears. Take it easy.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.
Oh, no.